Welcome to The Lobbying Show, a podcast about the people in government relations, how they got into it, what their jobs entail, what works, and what doesn't. I'm your host, Jim O'Brien. Today we sit down with Beth Loudy of SGAC. SGAC is the State Government Affairs Council. It is the Association for State Government Affairs Professionals. She is based in the Washington, D.C. area, just over the bridge in Virginia. And Beth has been there 18 years. And I know I have said this in the past about other organizations like Stateside, but SGAC is kind of the go-to organization for state government affairs professionals for the people who work in the 50 state capitals. So if you are a lobbyist in one of the state capitals, you need to know Beth Loudy and or other people at SGAC. They are the place where the people who hire state lobbyists get together and talk. They talk about what's going on in Minnesota, what's going on in Albany, what's going on in Michigan, who do you like, who do you hire, what do you like about them. And so you really, if you are working in a state capital, should be familiar with SGAC. Now, you can join SGAC, but only if you work in more than one state. They're a multi-state organization. So we sat down with Beth in her office one morning, and it was a great interview. It was fun to sit down with Beth. She knows everyone in the business, and I mean everyone. We had a little fun with Beth talking about that old saying that there is an association for everything in Washington, D.C. At one point in her career, Beth worked for the National Oilseed Processors Association. So there truly is an association for everything. So here is our interview with Beth, and I hope you enjoy it. So we are sitting here with Beth Loudy, the executive director of the State Government Affairs Council, commonly known as SGAC. Mm-hmm. And Beth, you were just saying that we're sitting here in front of these microphones. We just flew in from just flew into Washington, D.C. and took the 10-minute ride to your office. It was very convenient. And you were just saying that you're very familiar with these type of microphones because you grew up in a radio family.
I did.
So tell us about that.
My dad owned a radio station. And so...
Where?
In Kilmarnock, Virginia.
Okay.
Very small town in the northern neck of Virginia.
Okay.
Not a lot of people are familiar with that term. He managed a radio station about 30 miles down the road, and when I was about 11, built a radio station from the ground up, and it was our family business until my parents retired about 20 years ago. So, very, very familiar. I had the best mixtapes of anybody in my high school class.
I bet you did. And what were some of the jobs that you had at the radio station? Were you ever on the air?
I was. I was not a DJ. My dad had the morning show, so he was on air for a couple hours a day. My brother was a DJ when he was in high school. I never DJed, but I did record some commercials, and I helped out on weekends sometimes doing books and also putting together the tide charts for the week. So it's a community on the Chesapeake Bay. So,
wow.
Yep.
And so, was your dad, was it kind of news and talk in the morning? What's going on? Is that what he'd be doing?
It was him and one of the other managers of the station, and it was very much like banter, news and talk.
What's going on?
It was a very community-based radio station. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So, Beth, they say that there is an association in Washington, D.C. For everything.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know what I'm about to ask you next?
Probably some of the ones I've worked for.
Yes, indeed. And that is what I thought of when I saw the National Oilseed Processors Association. I'm sure they go by their acronym.
NOPA, yeah.
NOPA. Everyone has an acronym. So tell us about the National Oilseed Processors Association.
So they are manufacturers and processors of soybeans, mainly.
Yep.
And then sunflower, safflower, canola. So all the oils that you see on the grocery store shelves,
yep.
A lot of what they dealt with were domestic farm issues, farm mm-hmm. subsidies, that kind of thing. I did some lobbying work on the 90 Farm Bill. They also dealt with a lot of international trade issues.
Okay. So the Farm Bill, you'd be doing a lot of work on that mm-hmm. every year.
Yeah. Well, I was only there for a few years, but yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, so what did you do for them? Is that what you were?
I was support to their political director, government affairs director. So yeah, I was young. But I did do some lobbying on the Hill. One of the highlights of my career was when I called Senator Heflin out from the floor, and he actually came out and talked to me, and I thought I was big stuff. So
that's great. How did you get that job?
Kind of landed in it, actually. I started my career right out of college working for one of the big political campaign committees on the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a good cycle for them. And so when the cycle was over, I was told that they did a major downsizing, told I'd had a guaranteed job in 6 months, but didn't have anything for me in the meantime. And I needed to pay rent and buy groceries.
Yep.
And so did some interviewing. And one of the people I interviewed with in another one of the campaign committees, they had a hiring freeze. And she said, well, we don't have anything right now either, but there's a gentleman in our condo building who runs a trade association. And I know he's looking for somebody. I think you'd be perfect. So do you mind if I take your resume home and give it to him? So within a week's time, I had an interview there and had started a job with the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, or NASDA. And I worked there for a couple of years, and that's where I sort of got into the agriculture realm. And then when I saw that NOPA was hiring, and they were part of a association management firm, so a lot of opportunities, a lot of other trade associations that you could work on, delve into a lot of different issues. So I hopped over and went to work for them for a number of years.
And how what was it like representing the State Department of Ags?
It was interesting.
Yeah.
It was, our members were the state directors, commissioners, and directors of agriculture. So
you had 50 members, clients, essentially.
Yep. And very much a very conservative organization, mm-hmm. as you could probably imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But really interesting stuff, and a lot of great, really interesting people on staff, small staff. But we had scientists and writers and folks doing some political advocacy as well. So
and grassroots and that type of stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And did you work on that too?
A little bit. I mean, again, I was just a young thing at that point. So I basically did whatever they asked me to do, but I was direct support to the gentleman who was running their government affairs.
Okay. So backing up, where did you go to college?
William & Mary.
Wow. Very smart. Did you have any internships or do any campaign work or student government while you were at William & Mary?
I did. I've always been interested in politics and government. And yeah, so while I was at William & Mary, I was involved with the College Republicans
mm-hmm.
and ended up being the vice president of that organization and was the first district representative to the state organization.
Okay.
And yeah, I did a lot of campaign work all over the state. Probably the most was for my congressman, who I had known since childhood.
Uh-huh.
And so I did a lot of work on his volunteer work on his campaigns.
And who was that?
Congressman Herb Bateman.
Okay. As the district representative, does that mean you get to go to the state convention?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And how was that?
Oh, it was great fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great fun. Very interesting. Yeah. And while I was in college through that involvement, I got to go to my first inauguration and inaugural ball. And
in Washington or for
For
Richmond?
Ronald Reagan, yeah.
Okay. And so being a college student going to the state convention, that must have been great.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah.
Really fun, really interesting, good education.
Okay. So then you went and did that campaign work. And then what did you do after NOPA?
We'll
go by the acronyms.
Okay. Like I said, with NOPA, they were managed by an association management firm.
Okay.
So I started there in 89, I think. And I stayed there until 2004. So SGAC was also part of that.
Okay.
Part of their clientele. So from NASDA to NOPA, then I did some work for, and I don't even think all of them are on my resume, National Association of Video Distributors, The one that I worked on for over 8 years was the National Healthcare Anti-Fraud Association.
Okay.
And I was full-time on their staff for most of those years.
And tell me about their work. What are they? I mean, obviously the name speaks for itself, but how do you approach trying to get fraud out of healthcare?
Well, our members...
I assume it's with Medicaid and Medicare?
A lot of that, but also private.
Okay.
Private sector as well. Our members were private sector health insurers.
Oh, okay. So and, not Medicaid and Medicare.
Well, some of that as well. So the insurance companies and then also organizations like the FBI, postal inspectors. And so what we did was help them. We dealt with the people in their fraud departments. So help them with their efforts to investigate medical fraud. Doctors billing.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. What's the most typical fraud? Is the doctors billing for procedures that weren't done?
Or upcoding them, or yeah.
Okay. And how long did you work there?
8 years, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And then from there you went to SGAC?
Yep.
Okay, and what was your first job here?
Executive director.
Oh, wow. Yep. Okay. And how has it changed from when you first came here till now? What are some of the biggest changes you've seen?
Well, SGAC has grown phenomenally. When I came on board, we had, I think, 99 members.
Okay.
And now we've got 185, I believe, is the current number. Our highest, we capped it just over 200 at one point.
You cap it at 200?
We don't cap it.
Oh, okay.
But I think that's about the biggest we've been so
okay.
far.
Okay.
But yeah, it's gotten a lot more diverse looking around the room at our conferences. A lot more diversity, which is great, and we're really striving to do even more of that. We have probably about 8 or 9 years ago, we really saw a gap in professional development for state affairs professionals. There are a lot of organizations out there, both for-profit and not-for-profit, that do a lot of training for federal lobbyists, but there aren't really a lot that do a lot of training really dedicated to state affairs professionals. And we decided we were the best organization to fill that gap. And so we started a professional certificate program and was met with great enthusiasm by the members. And it's grown exponentially since its inception. And we, a few years ago, also started an advanced certificate program, which is basically our graduate degree program. And so, yeah, we offer a lot of training through our conferences, through webinars, through regional seminars, really just to help our members to be on top of all the trends in the industry and to do their jobs better and more efficiently.
So for someone who is working in-house and gets that certificate, that advanced certificate, is it a combination of learning and becoming professional and getting that certificate to show their organization that they are developing professional skills or you know, advancing in that area?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have some mandatory courses and then some electives, very much like when you're getting a degree. And they really do learn tools and techniques for how to do their jobs better. And when they graduate, we do an actual graduation ceremony at our member business meeting every summer. Mm-hmm. They get a framed diploma and hang it on their walls. A lot of them post it in their LinkedIn profile. So it's something that really does carry a lot of weight in the industry, and people realize that you're very dedicated to your professional growth and to, you know, being the best in the state affairs industry.
Yeah, it does, because people talk about it. It's definitely something that people want to get and seek out. So how many courses do you have to take, or how many hours is it?
12.
12.
12 courses.
12 courses. Mm-hmm. And how long does it typically take someone to do?
2 to 3 years, generally.
Okay.
It's taking a little less time nowadays because we do... we've now built an on-demand webinar library.
So it's all by webinar?
No, it's not all by webinar. You have to really get the full depth of the program, you have to attend our national summit every spring. We offer a lot of the courses through that. But we do, like I said, do some regional seminars around the country where we'll offer 3 or 4 different sessions in one day or a half day. But then, yeah, we do webinars at least once a month, generally, and they are now all available on our on-demand library. So if folks either are too busy, you know, can't do one live, but it's something that interests them and or they need the credit, they can go and download it and do it on demand on their own time. So.
And besides that, if you're an in-house person responsible for state government relations, why would you join SGAC? Why do people join it?
Well, the memberships are organizational. Mm-hmm. And so anybody on your team who does government affairs work, state government affairs work, can participate in any of our programs. Mm-hmm. In addition to the professional development, we also offer a lot of networking opportunities, both peer-to-peer and with state legislators and policymakers. It's a great way to build really an unparalleled peer network, folks that you can go to and rely on for information, connections. And our members are very generous with their knowledge and their resources with other folks in the industry, and especially when they know that you're also an SGAC member.
Right.
So yeah, that and then the connections with the state legislators and all of the other alphabet soup of state government organizations out there. We have great relationships with them and their staff and can always help you connect them and sort of navigate that whole sea of alphabet soup organizations.
Right. CSG, NCSL, mm-hmm. ALEC, or any of those organizations.
Yep.
Okay. And you have many events. You have your big annual event, I think, coming up in Arizona. Is
we
that
do.
Correct?
We do. Our Leaders Policy Conference.
Leaders Policy. Do you want to tell the listeners about that?
Yeah, it's one of our premier offerings. Every November, we hold this conference, sort of bounce back and forth east-west. It is a policy conference. SGAC does not lobby. We don't take positions on policy issues. But what we try to...
So when you say it's a policy conference, you're emphasizing the word policy. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well,
What do you not?
Yeah, we really do cover the hot issues that state legislatures
care about.
Dealing with.
Okay.
We have focus groups with legislators and just through our interaction with them throughout the year. And then, of course, our members who are in the state capitals all the time. So we put together balanced panels on hot topics that legislators are dealing with. And again, we don't lobby from the podium. We don't have sessions where, you know, it's not pay to play. There's not one organization that just has a session that deals with their version of an issue or their issues with it. It's a safe environment for legislators. What it does is really open up the dialogue.
It provides a platform.
It does. It does. And not only do the legislators get to hear from industry experts, but also we have legislators on panels. So ones that have dealt with issues, whether they're committee chairs or leaders in their states. And so they can learn from each other, too, what some of the challenges and pitfalls and successes other states have had in dealing with particular issues.
And so is there model legislation that comes out of it, or is it more discussional?
Just discussion,
educational?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. That must be helpful. And so for that conference, you invite top legislators from all the states,
mm-hmm.
and your members, so it provides a great opportunity for people to see leaders from multiple states.
Yeah. Yeah, we invite the top six leaders from each state. So the Senate presidents, House speakers, majority mm-hmm. and minority leaders from each chamber. And then we invite the leadership of the organizations that you mentioned before, like the NCSL, CSG, ALEC, Women in Government.
Mm-hmm.
And so really just bring together a great group of folks from all over the country, all 50 states and the territories.
Mm-hmm.
And we usually have about 70 or 80 legislators there. And the ratio of our members to the legislators is usually about 2-1. So great, okay. More intimate type of conference where folks can build those relationships as well as learn together.
And what other events do you have during the year that are your big events? Is that the biggest event all year?
Probably the biggest. We also have our our national summit every spring, which is the conference just for our members. It's dedicated strictly to professional development
mm-hmm.
and building the peer network. And then we do a number of social events throughout the course of the year. We do some of our own standalone events
mm-hmm.
All over the country, but also with most of the other groups when they have their conferences, we'll have some kind of an event. So
like NCSL this summer, you would have an event there, or
yep, we actually had three events there.
Okay.
We do an event where we honor the NCSL leadership, the executive committee, and in particular the outgoing president and staff chair. And then we do our member business meeting where we elect our board every year and talk about any pressing business. And then we host an event called the Late Night Event, which is probably one you've heard of, maybe attended. Yes. It's a very well-attended event.
Yes to both.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we do one of those events on a little bit smaller scale at the CSG National Conference, and then we'll do events at the various other CSG regional conferences throughout the summer, ALEC, annual meeting, things like that. So.
Okay. So I was trying to think, do you have an organization that there really isn't anyone else doing what you're doing, is there?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. Okay.
No, there are organizations that do pieces of what we do, I guess, mm-hmm. but on a much smaller scale. And we don't really feel like there's anybody we're in competition with. We partner with some other organizations, but we're sort of it for state government affairs professionals.
And how many members on your board?
17.
Wow. And how long are the terms on the board?
Board members serve 2-year terms. They can serve up to 2, so generally 4.
Okay.
And then they either roll off the board or are elected to an officer position, and the officers are 1-year terms.
Okay. And for contract lobbyists, you have to be, well, not just for contract lobbyists, really for anyone, you have to be operating in more than one state.
Yes.
To be a member.
Yes.
Okay. For anyone that's out there listening. Now, do you have internships here? Do you offer internships here at SGAC?
We have had summer interns, a few summers. We don't do them year-round generally, but in the summer when a lot of the events are getting ramped up, we do.
So if a college student was interested in having a summer internship, they can always reach out and see what may or may not be available.
Absolutely.
It doesn't hurt. So how many state capitals you've been to?
State capitals? That's an
probably
interesting
a lot.
Question.
Well, let me ask you this. What's your favorite?
My favorite state capital? Probably Austin.
Ah, okay. Great city.
Great city. Great city. Beautiful capital. Obviously very similar to the nation's capital.
Yes.
And a very interesting tour if you've never taken it.
Okay.
I highly recommend. But, I mean, there are so many beautiful state capitals. Mm. That's an interesting question. I'll have to go back and put together a list. I've visited 49 of the 50 states, but haven't been to the capitals in all of them.
So is there anything else you want to tell us, Beth, about SGAC or your upcoming plans?
I mean, SGAC is just a great organization. The members are interesting. They're fun. They are road warriors. It's just a great group of people to get to know and to be on the road with. I feel like we get to know our members a lot more than a lot of other trade association staffs because we are traveling to a lot of the same conferences and state capitals as them and with them. So we get to see them all over the country and become friends with them.
It's a tight-knit group.
It really is.
And they do reach out to one another when they're looking for people in the States. It's the network they seem to turn to.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, send an email out to 2 or 3 colleagues and say, you know, has anybody done any work in Michigan? Mm-hmm. And who have you used and did you like them? And, you know, here's my issue. And that's really invaluable for those members because it really helps them get feet on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And also if you go into any state capitol in session and, you know, you go out to any of the nearby restaurants, you'll see a lot of our members gathering together. They seek each other out and are there to support each other.
Well, Beth, this has been great. We appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
And all the best and good luck at your conference.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Well, there it is. Beth, thank you very much. And it was interesting also to hear about their certificate program, the program designed for those state government affairs professionals. Very interesting. So, and if you like our podcast and want to help spread the word, the best thing you can do, and it's easy, is to subscribe to our podcast and leave a comment on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. If you want additional insights, about our guests, upcoming shows, and more, sign up for the Monday Morning Coffee with The Lobbying Show at our website, thelobbyingshow.com. If you're not already, be sure to follow us on Twitter at The Lobbying Show. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram also. So there you have it. I hope you enjoy it. See you next week.